It is Locked On Jazz for the 15th of August. Mike Conley shares some thoughts about being on the Utah Jazz while Joe Ingles gets ready in Australia. Plus, Tony Jones joins me for day three of the summer interview series, touching on how good are the Utah Jazz. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making your Jazz fandom even that much better. Hope everyone's well. Jazz single season tickets are on sale, so if you want to head to a game this year, make sure you you jump on and get those single game tickets. They are available for you. I listed my 10 games that I wanted to go to this year. Support for today's show comes from Manscaped, the number one in men's below the belt men's grooming. You've seen Manscaped on Shark Tank and Men's Journal named the Lawnmower 2.0 as one of the best tools in men's grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with promo code LOCKEDON at manscaped.com. That's LOCKEDON at manscaped.com. All right, Mike Conley did an interesting interview with Alex Kennedy. Mike, just continuing on the sportsmanship and teammate of the year, was down at the new NBA Junior Games in Orlando and at Disney World. Jeff Green revealed to us in that interview that the two of them were going to Disney World together with their families, so this must have been the trip. And Mike was down there and talked to Alex Kennedy. There were two things that jumped out to me from that conversation. First is, it's pretty clear that Quinn and Mike Conley have already done work together. That as Mike Conley talks about Quinn, it's clear to me that that conversation, that there have been conversations there, that relationship is being built, that Quinn has taken the time to get to know Mike already, which is really what just, you know, makes Quinn pretty special. And under, you know, I like J.B. Bickerstaff an awful lot. I don't think he's been in a position to succeed yet in his career as a head coach. But he's not, you know, I don't think he's Quinn Snyder. I mean, I think J.B. Bickerstaff might be a good coach one day. He's now an assistant. But you start looking at, like, who Mike Conley has been with recently. So J.B. Bickerstaff, the previous year's really hurt. Dave Fizdale, who is a neat dude, I don't put him, and he's worked with Eric Spoelstra, it's great, I don't put him in, and maybe unfairly, in the group of like X's and O's masters when I talk around the league. Dave Yeager before that, I mean, suddenly, this is Mike's fourth coach in four full seasons and five overall seasons. Yeager, another coach who I think is pretty good, but interestingly kind of how it torpedoed in both Memphis and Sacramento. So that, I think, will be interesting. Those teams that, you know, those were some pretty darn good teams for Mike as well. The other one is that, you know, Mike's last playoff appearance in Memphis is an interesting one to look back at, because it's actually maybe the beginning of, well, they get swept, actually. I take that back, their last playoff win. 2016, they get swept by San Antonio. But the year before that, I think he's in one of the more interesting playoff series of all time, where they end up playing the Golden State Warriors and have the lead in that series, and the Warriors come back to win that series in the 14-15 season, and that and then they do get swept the next year, so it wasn't his last playoff appearance. But that series, if you go back and look at it, you know, Memphis has them on the ropes. Memphis loses game one by 15, wins game two by 7. Conley's 22 leads the way. They win game three. They're up 2-1 heading in Memphis, and then the Warriors crush the Grizzlies 101-84 in that game four performance. Steph had 33, and then they go back to Golden State, and then they close them out 3-2 in Memphis. But that Golden State often talks about that being that deficit of kind of the turning point of their dynasty, in that Mike's, that game four, when was Jeff Green and Mike Conley on that team. So it'll be interesting to hear their perspectives on it a little bit. Mike Conley was just 4 of 15 on that day. Steph went off for 33, and the 101-84 win wasn't really that close, and maybe that's all that, you know, maybe that wasn't that close a series anyway, considering how great Golden State was. Memphis was the fifth seed. Anyway, so I think it's interesting just kind of to think about. I don't, you know, Quinn's unique in his coaching. I don't mean this as much of, I'm not trying to say this as a criticism toward any of those guys, but I think the interesting thing is what a different coach Quinn is than what Mike has or has had. The other one I thought was really interesting was you have the comments by Conley about Donovan's willingness to learn. Donovan's willingness to learn, and in one even said, I need, you know, he asked questions and like how to shoot a floater. So Donovan's aware of the fact that his floater percentage was not great last year. I think that's clear. Donovan, and this is just consistent to who Donovan is. And, you know, I don't want to ever take this for granted because he's just such an incredible kid. There might be some kids out there, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown kind of fit into this last year in Boston, who would look at Bojan Bogdanovic and Mike Conley is coming in and being a little concerned about what their role is and, you know, how many of their possessions they're taking and what's happened. And Donovan seems to be taking the exact opposite approach to how he is going, how he's going to be, you know, how he's going to treat this, is that he's already gone and worked out with Mike. He's taken the time with Mike to absolutely learn from him. And I really believe that Mike Conley is going to be an incredibly important piece for Donovan's career, because I think Mike Conley is going to teach Donovan that you can be an absolutely total stud, leader, star, and still be a good guy. And I think that's what Donovan is looking to learn. Bogdanovic, by the way, we just haven't talked about much. It's interesting. If you go back, I read these quotes when we first signed him, and people might have missed it. Is the quotes from his teammates about him in a Ringer article last year. Thaddeus Young said, from day one, he's been a guy who's been integrated. Last year, he did a lot for us. He guarded some of the best guys on the court and made a lot of tray balls. I know he stays to himself a lot, said Darren Collison, but I'm glad he's getting attention. He deserves it. The thing with Bogey is he doesn't care. I say that in a good way. And then Billy Beno, their assistant, said he's a bit of a loner. That's okay because I'm a loner too. Sometimes I see him at the downtown Whole Foods. He's usually by himself. Nate McMillan said he's one of those guys you have to say, whoa, to. He just keeps showing growth in his game because he's using him differently now, and we're depending on him more. And then Billy Beno about his free agency said, I'm just praying we don't lose him. So interesting, just kind of the personality characteristics, but clearly this is a quiet guy who just busts his butt and does his job. And so I think that actually fits in pretty well when you add the personality differences between, you know, Mike, who I think is going to be this quiet, solid leader, and that of Bojan. Anyway, exciting times. Article in the Ringer of whether the Jazz are really a title contender. The narrative that's getting out there a little bit is that the Jazz are going to be this great team, but they don't have the firepower to match the Lakers, the Clippers, some of the teams in the playoffs. I think that actually is a pretty fair narrative. If I had a, you know, optimistic guess of what I think we're going to be, I think we're a little bit of the Milwaukee Bucks of last year, where I think we very easily could end up having just this great year and being a number one seed. And I do think we're playing a money ball that nobody else is. And if Quinn continues to do that, we're better than everybody else in that regard. And then, you know, if that, does that hold up in the playoffs, and how do we match up against some of these stars? I think will be a question that will be lingering all the way into April, and pretty exciting that we're sitting here in August with a question for April. Tony Jones is our interview series. If you wanted to thank him, he loves his Twitter, so please send T. Jones on the NBA. That would be great to send him a Twitter thank you. I would greatly appreciate that. Craig Bowlerjack is scheduled for next week, so that should be a great deal of fun. Today's show is brought to you in part by Murdoch Hyundai. I have been driving the Santa Fe for a while, loving it. I give back these cars after a certain period of time, and it looks as though I'm going to have to give back my Santa Fe. I'm kind of bummed. It's really been a totally cool car. The Santa Fe's got every bell and whistle imaginable with the safety features, car self-driving, keeping you in your lane assists, cruise control, back doors stay closed if they think a car's coming to make it safe for your kids. The SUV lineup is just, it's why it's winning all these awards. The Tucson, the Kona, I've been driving that Santa Fe. The Kona's the small, snappy, quick one. The Tucson's the mid-range one. They've really done a nice job upgrading. And now there's the new 2019 Palisade. Murdoch is the nation's number one Palisade dealer. Come make your reservations today before they're gone. So check those out, and they are moving off quickly. Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street, also in Logan and in Linden. If you're buying a car right now and Hyundai is not on your list, just take a moment, add it to your list, and at least look at what you're going to get for your money. Then you can make your own decision. But I think if you take the moment to take the time to find out what's going on there, I think you'll be super impressed by what's taking place with Murdoch Hyundai, 4646 South State Street.
Final day with Tony Jones. Just been an easy conversation. No fights. We're disappointing people immensely. let me ask you, how good are the Utah Jazz?
I think they're one of the handful of teams that are good enough to win an NBA championship. That's probably the easy answer. Obviously, that doesn't mean that, you know, they're favorites to win an NBA championship or anything, but they're good enough. And this is the first year you could say that. They're good enough to win the West, and if they're good enough to win the West, they're good enough to win the whole thing. You know, I think I would, right now, I will put them top three in the West. I think my top three in the West, to me, are the Los Angeles Clippers, the Jazz, and the Denver Nuggets. I think I will put the Lakers fourth. I will put Houston fifth. You know, I think that they are a team that has a chance to be a top five team in the league, both offensively and defensively. And typically those type of teams do really well. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, if this team could reach its ceiling. And I think a lot of that depends on Donovan Mitchell, because I think you know what you're going to get from Mike Conley. You know what you're going to get from Bojan Bogdanovic and Rudy Gobert. You know what you're going to get from Joe Ingles. You know what you're going to get from Jeff Green and Ed Davis. Donovan, to me, and to a lesser extent, Dante Exum, those guys are wild cards. Those guys are the guys that have the chance to offer and lend internal improvement and internal growth. And if Donovan can turn himself into an efficient 25-point-per-game scorer, then I think this team is really going to be a tough team to deal with.
What I think is so interesting on this is the two players to me that are the key for the entire season are Donovan and Rudy. And I love when a roster is built in a fashion so that you're relying on your best player. Sure, I read your piece was good about, you know, Dante and what he might be able to do, or Moutier. Sure, that'd be a bonus. But if Gobert can be great defensively and the Jazz are still one of the best teams defensively, they are sick. If Donovan can do exactly what you just said, they are great. And the other guys they've added are all adults, and I know exactly what they're going to give me. I know what I'm getting from Joe. I know what I'm getting from Bojan. I know what I'm getting from Conley. I know what I'm getting from Green. I know what I'm getting from Ed Davis. And that, to me, is the beauty of this, is it's set up so that the two best players have to have good years.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think with Rudy, you know, he's entering his prime. He's 27 years old. And which is crazy because it feels like yesterday that he was 21. And, you know, he's entering his prime. And I think that his step is he's proving that he can still be the same All-NBA guy in a postseason setting that he is in a regular season. I think Donovan's next step is proving that he can go and drop 25 a night on – you know, 47, 40, 85 splits. And proving that he can defend his position as well. You know that Mike Conley, to me, is going to be you know, a guy that's going to be one of the seven or eight best point guards in the league. You know that, Bojan Bogdanovic is going to average 18 points a game and shoot 40% from the field, 40% from 3-point range. You know, same thing with Joe Ingles. So, you know, when you look at Donovan Mitchell and you look at Rudy Gobert, those guys, you know, if they raise their games, that raises the ceiling. You know, but it's going to be interesting because, you know, I think the floor of this team is really high, and I think the ceiling of this team is really high as well. This is the Western Conference, and it's shaping up to be a heck of a conference once again.
What's your concern?
Concern is always injury, and I think your big concern is can Ed Davis replace most of what Derek Favors bought? You know, if Rudy has to miss 15, 20 games, can Ed Davis, can this team win with Ed Davis at center? And if Rudy has to miss 20 games, can Tony Bradley step in and play real NBA minutes? Or do the Jazz have to, you know, improvise and go with Jeff Green at the five or you know, something like that? You know, can this team guard your big hybrid power forward against the Lakers? Can this team guard Anthony Davis with Boogie Cousins in the middle? You know, can this team guard Giannis Antetokounmpo? Which is less of an issue because Giannis is out east. Can this team guard LeBron? Can this team guard Kawhi Leonard? So I think Royce O'Neal is going to be a really important piece as well, because I think that he's going to be asked to do a lot of special things defensively, and he's going to have to rise to the occasion, especially in the playoffs when this team really needs it defensively.
You did not mention Moutier or Exum. Everybody else has said that that's their concern.
Is it a concern? To me, Moutier is kind of icing on the cake. The concern with Exum, obviously, is can he stay on the floor? Is your concern who's going to play backup point guard? Is that what you're saying? Is that your concern?
I mean, if those are two guys that are shooting below 40% for their careers, below 30% from three for their careers, Moutier has not shown defense, Exum has, and you better get something. The way that roster is constructed, once you start paying $30 million for guys, you better get some of these other guys to play, right? Like, I mean, if Moutier right. turns out to not be good and Exum turns out to either not be good or not be able to be healthy, that's like, who's Nigel Williams-Goss? Like, how are you filling out the minutes?
Well, I think with Exum, him not being good is, to me, is less of a concern because we know he's good defensively. So he offers value somewhere on the floor, no matter what. And I think that I saw Exum play the best basketball of his career for 3 weeks last season. And if he can get back to that point, then to me, I think that that's less of a concern. The concern with Exum to me is he's just got to stay on the floor. Like, my guy, like, you got to stay healthy. You know, and I know that injuries are unfortunate. I know that injuries are really out of the player's concern. I mean, out of the player's control. But, you know, for him to be an effective NBA player, I mean, this is, in a lot of ways, this is his most important year. He's got to prove that he can stay on the floor, and he's got to prove that he can be a consistent contributor. I think backup point guard is less of an issue for me because I think that if Exum turns out not to be able to handle it, if Moutier turns out not to be able to handle it, you just give the spot to Donovan. You can just stagger Mike and Donovan. You can have Donovan play point guard with the second unit, and you're going to be fine there. And you have enough depth everywhere else that you can mix and match, that you'll be fine there. So I think that, you know, the backup point guard spot to me is a lot less concerning, and it's a lot less concerning because Joe Ingles is going to be on the floor a lot with the second unit as well. You know, so I think that the concern for me with Dante is that he stays on the floor. And I think Moutier, to me, I think he has to play his way into minutes. I don't think minutes are going to be handed to him.
He's Tony Jones. We'll talk about the NBA. He just sloughed the Lakers and the Rockets into the second tier of the Western Conference. We'll find out why. When we come back, you're listening to Locked On Jazz. Remember, Locked On NBA is up. Excuse me, Locked On NBA is up and rolling every single day of the offseason, all 5 days a week, still bringing you content. Make sure you subscribe to Locked On NBA on your preferred podcast provider.
Before we get to that final segment with Tony Jones, it is Intercap Lending I want to tell you about. Brock and the crew at Intercap have been just amazing. The coolest thing is the growth that they're taking place. But the only way you grow in the mortgage company, in the mortgage business, is if you're just getting deals done, right? Like, one, it's the number one sign that you're growing is because you are getting deals done. And by doing that, you are getting clients, real estate agents who know. And that's what's happening. As of June, they exceeded all their production of 2018. Like, so they have done more loans in the first 6 months than they did all of last year. Why? Because they're an independent lender. They get deals done. Steve Carter's absolutely unbelievable in how much he's willing to help clients. And Steve Carter is our designated Locked On Jazz lender. So really cool deal that Brock and the guys over at Intercap put together, which is, all right, Locked On Jazz, you get all your listeners, you get a corporate discount. And we have a designated guy for you, and that's Steve Carter. So if you are in the market for a loan, refi, you want to get taken care of, or you're buying a house right now, ask your real estate agent why they're not using Intercap, or you decide, you know what, we're using Intercap. You have that right. Nobody ever exerts it, but you do. Call Steve Carter, 385-800-8528. That's 385-800-8528. Intercap Lending, NMLS number 190465. For more information, visit intercaplending.com. They get deals done. They have Steve Carter's amazing with his diligence. It's where we did our loan. They still have it right now. They're a direct lender, low credit, self-employed, multiple properties, whatever it is that might make your loan unique. Because they're a direct lender, they can get those kind of things done. Intercap Lending, 385-800-8528. That's 385-800-8528.
Final segment with Tony Jones. You just sloughed the Lakers and the Rockets into second-tier Western Conference teams. What's up with that?
Well, can tier one be four teams? Because I will put the Lakers in. I think the Lakers are. I think the Lakers, the Jazz, the Nuggets, and the Clippers are the best teams. I think the Clippers are the best team, and I think that, you know, then you have those other three. I will put the Rockets in the second tier because I just don't think they're as good as they have been. And I think that other teams have passed them up. You know, I think as good of friends as Russell and James Harden are, I think it is a weird fit stylistically. And you're asking for at least one of those two guys to subjugate a lot of what they have done. I thought Chris Paul was a lot better of a fit for James Harden, because Chris's strengths were a lot different than James's strengths. And I think Chris had a gravity that Russell Westbrook doesn't have, because Russell Westbrook is not as good a shooter as Chris Paul is. You know, but it'll be interesting. I mean, I still think that Houston's really good. I still think they'll defend really well. I think that, like last year, they'll have a real hard time defending big wings because, you know, they don't have Trevor Ariza anymore. You know, but I think that the Lakers and the Nuggets and I think and the Jazz, I think that those teams are better than them. So, it'll be interesting to see, but, you know, I think that those three teams are better than the Rockets right now.
So you go back through the last 3 years of the NBA and you look at the 10 worst defensive teams in the league. You can only find one of them that has won more than 50 games. That was LeBron's Cavaliers team. LeBron won 50 games one other time. Otherwise, you don't win more than 50 games if you're a top 10 team, and particularly if you're in the West, or a bottom 10 team defensively. Do you think either the Rockets or the Lakers are going to be a bottom 10 defensive team this year?
Well, the Rockets are always going to be good defensively with the personnel that they have. I don't think they're going to be as good defensively because Chris is a lot better of a defender than Russell Westbrook is. The thing that Russell Westbrook brings with James Harden is now you got two guys that typically like to hide on, you know, non-offensive players. And kind of save their energy. I think that the Rockets, to me, the Rockets are one of the best teams, best defensive teams in basketball the last 2 years. I don't think that they're at that level, but they're not going to be bottom 10. They're still going to be good. Now the Lakers, that might be different. They might be, I don't know if they're going to be bottom 10, but they might be close to bottom 10 because, you know, they are missing. I think right now with their projected starting five, obviously Anthony Davis is a plus defender. Danny Green is a plus defender, but you know, who else in their rotation is really a plus defender? So, and plus,
their bench defense is disastrous.
Their bench defense is bad, but they're going to score a lot. And LeBron is, LeBron to me is still one of the top two players in the world. And Anthony Davis to me is one of the top six or seven players in the world. So, that kind of talent, that kind of top end talent is still going to win them a lot of games.
It's interesting to me to look at the Lakers and Anthony Davis. I agree with you on the where you say his talent is, but I waver a little bit on just, I always feel like there's something lacking. And I think Anthony Davis, he's great. Don't misunderstand parts of this. But I think he has gotten away with being in New Orleans. And I think we're going to learn that for every 32 and 20 that he puts on the bottom line, there's a 17 and 6 that follows it. And that's how he averages 24 and 14. And that's not going to work in Los Angeles at the same. He's going to have to play more consistently night in and night out than he ever has before.
Yeah. But, you know, I think some players are also typically helped by the situation that they're in. Now, some players make the situation that they're in, right? Like, I think that what's a good example of a player?
Kawhi Leonard in Toronto.
Kawhi Leonard in Toronto, but he always had a lot of help. Giannis in Milwaukee. Like, before they surrounded him with a lot of help, they were still good because he had a force of nature and he had a force of will that he just would not allow them to be a lottery team for an extended period of time. And he forced that team to be good. And then eventually the front office did their part and put really good players around him, if you know what I mean. So that's, to me, that's an example of a guy forcing a situation. Or forcing the situation that they're in. Giannis Antetokounmpo, he forced his situation. And Anthony Davis, he never forced his situation, but he can be helped by being in a better situation. And I don't think that LeBron is going to be around Anthony Davis he's going to let him just consistently put up 17 and 6. He's going to say, hey, I need more out of you. I need you to play. And I think that he's going to play. So I think that Anthony Davis is going to have a really good year. I think LeBron's going to have a really good year. The question is, can Lakers stop anybody? That's a huge question for them. And I think you know, a lot is going to rely on Kyle Kuzma and his ability to be a third guy. And because they're going to need a third guy, and they're going to need a fourth guy, but they need a third guy first. And they need Kyle to really step up and play well.
Okay, I'm really confused here. I'm like closer to thinking the Rockets are going to be okay than you are.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how does that happen? Like, I'm a numbers guy. Russell Westbrook is like a numbers disaster. But I actually feel like if Russell Westbrook and Mike D'Antoni's system is going to be okay, and it's going to turn, and he's going to become more efficient, and they're going to be really, like, I think they're, I don't know. I'll be surprised if the Rockets are not a 55-win team.
See, I think they're a 50-win team or a 51, 52-win team. So does that mean you think Denver is going to slide?
So I do think Denver's going to slide a little bit. And here's the reasons why I think Denver's going to slide a little bit. One, they had a very easy schedule last year. They caught fire early.
And they
gained a level of momentum that carried them throughout the year. So I think that's going to go away. The second thing is, as we saw with Utah last year, as we saw with Boston last year, one of the biggest myths in the world is continuity is a good thing. It's actually hard. When you come back and bring the same group together, but everybody's had an off season where they've had people talking to them about their, like, do you think Malik Beasley's ready to go play 14 minutes behind Gary Harris who's playing 30? I don't. Like, I think
Malik Beasley wants to play 25 minutes.
Right. And everybody's been telling him how good he is. And Michael Porter Jr. now is wanting in on minutes. And Jeremy Grant's now in that line. Like, I think there's little things. The other one is they were 31-15 last year in close games.
That's
their defense was 5 points per 100 possessions better than anyone else in the NBA. That's not going to last. That was a bizarre, weird thing took place in a small sample size for them in the clutch, and they're going to lose some of those games this year. Teams shot 20% from three-point range against the Denver Nuggets last year in the clutch.
That's unsustainable. I think the biggest thing that you said that I agree with is their schedule. Their schedule, I mean, their schedule was one of the talks of the NBA last year and just how easy it was. And, you know, how many breaks, like, you know, they caught the Jazz twice on back-to-backs at home, you know, and they had a bunch of home games early. They didn't have a lot of sustained road trips. You know, one of their biggest road trips was like at the end of the year when they were playing a bunch of teams that were, you know, in the lottery. You know, and I think that, you know, they took advantage of that schedule. And I think the close games thing, you know, they're probably going to lose a few of those as well. It'll be interesting. I think with your Houston point, if I'm Mike D'Antoni, I'm staggering James Harden and Russell Westbrook as much as possible, because then that just lets you put a Hall of Fame point guard who's in attack mode on the floor for 48 minutes. And that's different from the second Hall of Fame point guard, because Chris Paul, you know, he's a game manager with the second unit. He's been a game manager with the second unit the last few years, where Russell Westbrook, he's an attacker, and he's, you know, he's still in the prime of his career, and he's still able to be in attack mode, you know, for all of the minutes that he's on the floor. So, you know, I think that part could be a lot different and a lot better than what they've had. You know, and I would play James Harden and Russell Westbrook probably, you know, 15 minutes together, 20 minutes together, the first 5 minutes of each half and the last 5 minutes of each half. Their other minutes would be separated.
Tony Jones, read him on The Athletic. Thank you for your time. Much appreciated. Look forward to traveling with you and all the fun stuff that goes along with that. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, and I'm sorry that we did not get into a brawl.
Well, we haven't yet, and we're going to have to figure out how to get into it. We'll find it. We'll roll tape at some point when we get going.
We'll figure it out.
See you, buddy. That is Tony Jones. Read him at The Athletic. Follow him on Twitter. Thanks very much for TJ. Send him a thank you as well. It is Locked On Jazz.